recording settings and make sure I had them set up right. Whoops.
Well, can't you still do that, or do you need to end it?
Oh, we're going to find out.
Yay. Knowledge is power.
Knowledge is power. Knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
Recording options. Optimize. Separate audio file. We're good.
Probably going to have to chop out a bunch of that in editing.
That's all right. You're getting good at this stuff.
We'll have to see how my singing sounds. That will determine whether or not it stays in.
Oh, we're definitely cutting it then. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Well, remember my mother, church, 15 years old. That's how it goes.
Hey, we'll talk about Optimus a little bit today. We'll talk about you singing a little bit today. We got all kinds of good stuff.
Okay, stop. Hi, everybody.
Welcome to episode 20. Doug is masterfully editing this so that it all sounds coherent, and you don't realize how many cuts we've already made in the first 30 seconds of our recording.
It sucks so much.
But you're getting so good at it.
I know. It takes longer every time. So, what's this Optimus? Optimus? Like Optimus Prime?
Yeah, like Optimus Prime. Okay. Tesla. It's Tesla's robot. Elon Musk went for a walk with their robot today.
I am ashamed of myself because normally this is the kind of thing I would know.
Yeah, he went for a walk with Elon Musk went for a walk with Tesla's robot Optimus today. You know, there's still obviously a long way to go before we're at Terminator status, but there's a video out there. Gosh, just Google it, it actually pops up everywhere. It's their AI and robotics division working together to create this thing. And it's a humanoid looking robot. And it takes a stroll.
It walks like a grandpa.
Well, it's still ahead of me.
I think I need royalties for this because he obviously mimicked my walk.
Yeah, but he's completely untethered and just kind of strolling along.
Yeah, it does. It is clearly a lot more stable than what was it, Osimo or whatever that one that fell down the stairs. Can't have a Terminator that just gets defeated by stairs. It's not even a good movie.
I think what we need here is a clip from, gosh, was it the second Iron Man movie? Justin Hammer's got all the knockoff Tony Stark armor suits he's trying to get, and Tony Stark like hacks into the congressional video feed and shows it. And they're all just malfunctioning in epic ways.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, in one sense, this feels like it's a little bit of a tired topic because, you know, oh, end of Z world, iRobot, all those different movies and Terminators and everything else. But I mean, it's cool, I guess. What is it going to do, though? Like, what's the point, I think, is kind of my ask.
The goal is to make them self, I think they said self-driving is the term they want. But it's essentially to just get them to perform automated tasks that we can do on a, I don't want to say thinking level, but using AI to do things without proactive programming and commands. You tell it to do a thing and to behave a certain way, and it does it all on its own. So this is sort of the first step toward what we think of when we think of a fully functioning robot of the future.
I see. I could see from a functional perspective, I could see... It's terribly ironic. So at first, humans were just making things. And then humans were finding ways to split up the duties in making things. And then they made big machines to make a lot of the things, and the humans just put them together. And now we're making the fake humans to put the stuff together. So it's kind of like you're going to lose a job. You're going to lose your job on the assembly line to a robot.
Yeah, a matter of time, right?
And then what? Then you have to make robots to supervise the robots.
The problem is when our robots start doing the thinking and the programming and the leading for us. Like when that takes... When that's what happens.
That's already happening.
Well, when it happens on a bigger scale and we no longer have the illusion of control, that's when we have a problem.
Well, we're humans. We'll always have the illusion of control. I don't think you need to worry about that, Tom. I don't know what you're worried about. That's cool, I guess.
Your lack of enthusiasm disappoints me.
Well, what do you want me to say? Do you want me to... What do you want me to be excited about? I don't want it flying my plane for me. I don't want it driving my car for me. All this is a human. Okay, fine. Here, you got your fucking opinions.
Got him.
Got him.
Got him.
Every other automated thing that people have talked about futuristically or developmentally or otherwise up to this point. Easy example. The self-driving car. It feels easier to accept something like that because visually it's still a car. It's not walking like grandpa over here. But it's effectively the same thing. If you were to make one of these things, being able to make certain decisions, for example, like being your chauffeur, then I still have the same concerns. The classic, it decides that because of something that's happening ahead of it, it only has two choices. It can mow down 20 people on the sidewalk, or it can crash into the wall, almost assuredly killing you. And if I'm the one that purchased the self-driving car, I mean, the uninterested third party says, sorry, bro, 1 versus 20, but I paid for this. I paid for it to not kill me. So this is just another version of that. This thing, driving a car or flying a plane, is the same concept. It's going to make decisions that in one value system might be right, but that's not my value system. That's not necessarily the service I think I'm paying for. So it's just dressed up differently, but it's effectively the same sort of set of concerns, I feel like. That's my more full answer. I just don't know where I would see something like this and be like, yes, for sure, upgrade. It's one of those slippery slope things. The problem is when you make it make more decisions, then it runs into decisions it can't make. And then you make it make those decisions and you either just end up kind of flattening out the technology and you never actually get it to where it can really truly be total ease of use, or it ends up going far enough into becoming the thing that you actually didn't want. So it could be a cook in a restaurant, you know, as long as all the ingredients are in the right place, it can look and see, okay, you know, it's not going to just grab a patty at the exact same spot. It can kind of adjust and grab its next burger patty, like next, you know, in the pile. Stuff like that's good. But then, oops, it put like cayenne pepper in there instead of regular pepper. So now you have to fix that. And then eventually you get all the way down the line to where you tell the robot, hey, this person has an allergy to whatever. And now that's really cool because now it automatically knows what ingredients are in each piece of food. Now you have an even more, or you have an even lower error rate for allergies. And then what happens when it's like a regular chef and it decides that the customer doesn't know what it's talking about? Now you have a whole different problem. And now suddenly we've reached a point that we can't really go back from.
I think that's kind of the, I don't want to say the crux of the matter. I think that's the cornerstone of the whole thing and why it's impressive to me is that we're already at a point where we're at somewhere we can't come back from. There's no path but forward through this.
You're right. I should be excited instead.
Well, I'm not even saying excited, just intrigued is the word. I'm not sure this is a good thing, to be honest, but it is an intriguing thing. And it's a point where with AI developing exponentially the way it is right now, where AI is right now compared to where it was just 1 year ago is mind-boggling. Where it'll be in 3 years, God only knows. They're teaching it right now, kind of like they did with AlphaGo. AlphaGo. They're using a similar approach where they're getting it to teach itself now, which to me is fascinating. That's how AlphaGo became as powerful as it was and, you know, exceeded expectations as quickly as it did. They're now working in cases with AI where they're teaching it to teach itself instead of us teaching it. So we started off, but then it learns from itself. And it's essentially going through the learning process without our input. We have parameters set up, but I don't know how long that's going to last. But with the forward path that we're at, you know, now we're at this point where this thing can walk and can perform basic human tasks. And it won't be too long since this is just the beginning stage. This thing can already walk bipedal like this. Untethered, unhooked, without falling, looking stable. How long before automating this for military purposes, for undersea purposes, for space ops, exploration on planets and probes and spaceships? You know, we want to go to Mars. We want to go to other planets, other solar systems. Humans can't get on that thing and take a 40-year trip and come back and report. But we can load up a spaceship that'll get there with one of these guys. And if it can pilot and operate and make corrections and do this stuff without our constant input and guide itself, we can take exploration in space in a whole new way. This could do a lot of really awesome things. We won't use it for that. we're going to use this for things like you suggested, flipping burgers and firing people who require that minimum wage income to survive, and people who are trying to supplement retirement work with basic warehouse tasks. That's what we're going to use these things for initially. But the government will use them for bigger things. And by the time we all realize what they're being used for and what other governments are using them for and how far people are pushing this envelope, there's no going backward. It's only going forward. And I think that's actually kind of terrifying because by the time we know what they're really being used for, by the time we know how actually developed they are, it's too late to do anything about it. It's too late to go backwards. Military technology is so far ahead of where we know it is. It's already startling. Once you get a little bit of insight into that, you go, oh, we're capable of doing what? It's shocking. And the fact that they're showing us this robot that with robotics and AI can walk itself, guide itself, not fall over, adjust its course, interact. The fact that they're showing you this means that they've got something more somewhere. And it's
What it means is that the military already has something that looks different, but does functionally the same militaristic thing that they want right now. That's really what it means. Or at least they have a different way to do it. We're thinking Clone Wars, Star Wars, Clone Wars, when Clone Wars is never going to happen because whatever actually functionally fights a war like that on a battleground, it's not going to look like humanoid robots. It's just going to be something completely different, or it's going to be almost entirely digital. There won't be physical bullets or lasers or anything like that. It'll just be disabling each other constantly. So yeah, I was gonna make the comment of you mean how the military is already using it, not when they start using it. You do make a good point about stuff like space travel and things like that. And that could be there's actually a good so it's a Bruce Willis movie called Surrogates. I don't know if you've heard it or seen it. It's similar futuristic, semi-dystopian setup. I think it's been out for 10 or 15 years, so I'm just going to give away what I remember from the plot, assuming I even have the right movie title and ruin it for everybody. It's sort of like a Ready Gamer One, Ready Player One kind of setup where everyone has these humanoid android robots. And they live their lives through them. Like the robot goes to work, it's dressed in a suit. The robot drives the car. And what you're really doing is you're sitting at home in like a full body pod and controlling the robot. And then you just get out of your pod at the end of the day and walk over to your bed and go to sleep. But you live your entire life kind of through this walking, talking Oculus kind of deal. And the company that makes them, that's obviously the kind of ruling class company in the world at this point, is. They're talking about how you can live life because it also has some neural interface, they make up so that you can feel the same things, feel the warmth of the sunlight while you're actually safe in your home. So when you get into a car wreck, you don't die, you just buy another robot. And that's the whole premise. But, people are losing the human experience. Turns out they're actually bad guys trying to control everybody, and Bruce Willis has to do Bruce Willis things and save the day and start breaking people out of their. Trap, their mental trap. This I could see as being something like that. Not only can they go travel in space, but someone can, remote in and look through the robot's eyes, and you can kind of feel like you're seeing what it's like to be on Mars, for example. That's sort of like a Total Recall almost, but live action kind of concept. You can sort of have an experience without physically having to actually have it. But I do think that it is going to be used more for flipping burgers and taxi cabs and stuff like that because that's what we do. We all have cell phones, we all have the internet. Years ago was the first time I saw the question was, what would be most shocking if someone from the 1950s were teleported to today, what would be the most shocking thing to that person? And someone replied, in my pocket, I hold a device that can access the entirety of human knowledge, and I use it to look at pictures of cats and argue with strangers.
Yep.
And that's what we do. That's what we do with this technology because we're human. So we're going to get these great things that can space travel and air travel and reach previous places that we were never able to reach, drop them down the Marianas Trench and look around. N no, we're going to use it to make my food better or to. It's gonna help me practice my pitching. It'll be my simulated batter in my backyard. And This is not really a hot take, but I think because of what this topic is, it becomes sort of a hot take. Realistically, this is unlikely to actually change much. It'll be one of those things that does have significant changes if it ever becomes mainstream, but it won't happen overnight. They'll be introduced into this industry or that role or this industry. People used to talk about all the time about how the typewriter was going to put people out of work because now you could just one person could just type a bunch of stuff real fast. People were worried that some of the factories and those big machines assembling cars were going to put people out of work because, now you don't need someone to tighten the bolts. And somehow we have a continually increasing world population and there's still jobs to go around. There's just more stuff to find or do or more value to be had elsewhere. So this thing replacing certain tasks, I'm not sure it ends up being a huge shakeup. It might be brief, but there'll be more value, more jobs, more places. And if we finally hit a point where there's more humans than work value to be added somewhere, then we actually sort of reached a Jetsons level because now you don't need money to get stuff because a robot just makes your food. I don't know. It just feels like you may need less income because now you have stuff that does more for you on your day-to-day basis. As long as you afford that one thing or those couple of things, then you don't need to work as much. Like, bad take, but this alarm has been sounded before, I guess is what I'm getting at. Whenever there's big new technology increases, there's always people claiming it's going to put people out of work, irreversibly change our lives. And most of the time, people end up liking the change better. And most of the time, it's not, the apocalypse. So if we ever reach a point where it truly is earth-shatteringly different, it's probably going to actually be at a spot where people do have more free time and we don't actually have to worry about, job loss.
Yeah, I would go the other way. The robot itself may not be a game changer. It may not be a big deal in everyday society, but this use of AI, I think AI is going to be the single biggest driving technological advancement for probably the next 15 to 30 years, maybe more, maybe for the rest of our history. Who knows? Unless we develop quantum technology that we can replicate and actually utilize, this is probably going to be the biggest game changer we've ever had since nuclear fission.
Just ask a robot to do it after making your burger.
Well, there you go. They just better get my order right. I want extra pickles. I don't want two extra pickles. I want a handful of pickles on that bun. And I want it as thick as the burger patty. And I don't forget that. But I think what we've seen historically is that when you have some, revolutionary technology development, you see things like the wealth gap increase. You see this really massive widening between the classes, between wealth and poverty. That's pretty historical. And it has been since the American Industrial Revolution. And I don't see a world in which AI is developed to a level that is usable by people with money, where it doesn't make the wealthy much wealthier and remove a lot of the middle class jobs and remove a lot of middle class opportunities and increase the bottom end of the wage pool while it cuts out that middle class. That just seems to be what always happens. And I don't see any reason why it would be any different here. Because you and I aren't going to have the means to utilize AI in an effective manner to really reshape our lives significantly. We're not going to be in a position where we can take that and do something truly massive and generational. But Elon Musk can take AI and use it to manage his holdings in real time and look for best investment opportunities and cut losses and replace labor and replace people. And he can use it to really shoot his billions upward. Millionaires and billionaires can take that technology and leverage it and really skyrocket themselves. And that money comes from somewhere. And it can't come from the lower classes because they already don't have it. So it comes from the middle classes who can't afford to utilize the same power or the same technology. That's just kind of how it's always worked. So I think if AI hits this boom that it probably will, if you haven't already made your wealth, it's going to be harder to do it. And if you have made your wealth, this is going to help you multiply that and turn it into a generational thing.
So I'm saying surrogates, you're saying Elysium, I think was the movie with Matt Damon trying to get to the hoity-toity people city in the sky above the crappy Earth or something.
I guess. Yeah, I haven't seen that one either, but I guess so,
I
yeah.
saw it once a while ago. It's like my wife said one time, it's always the same movie. Futuristic, dystopian, bad guy ruler who needs to get offed. Some low life from the poor dregs of wherever comes in and has to do it.
Have you read Mistborn? Brandon Sanderson?
No.
Mistborn?
No.
You should read that book. Listen to it in audiobooks. Read the actual book. I think you will love that book.
Don't give me homework.
I'm giving you homework. It'll take you about 2 days to read the book. You listen to it in audiobooks. So it'll take you about a day.
You mean as long as it took for you to watch Zoolander?
Yeah, about that. Yeah. But no, it's very much the story you just depicted, but fleshed out in a really impressive fantasy world by a really strong writer that I'm a huge fan of, who I just did some research today for another project. Turns out he used GoFundMe, and I knew he had done something really amazing with GoFundMe and kind of taken publishing away from Tor, kind of taken publishing into his own hands. I didn't realize the depth of his success. Essentially, what he did in 2019-ish was he set up a GoFundMe and said, you know, I'm going to sell 4 secret books to people who want to contribute on GoFundMe. And he set his price. This is what it is. I don't know what it was, but I'm going to write these 4 books by 2023. And I'm only going to give them to people who contribute and support me on GoFundMe here.
It's actually a good idea.
Yeah. It was
Yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah.
But a lot of writers good can't marketing. Don't have a, right. A lot of writers don't have a fan base to leverage that and take the publisher out of it and not have the publisher marketing behind them. And like a lot of writers aren't at that level. Unless you're Stephen King, you probably don't have that kind of clout. Turns out he has that kind of clout, and he made $41 million doing this for 4 books. I was just astounded.
Wow.
And I'm a huge fan of his. I listened to his podcast before he left it. He's got a new one now that I just recently started. I watch a lot of his writing videos. I've read most of his books. He's a fantastic writer, and I think a good human being based on what I've heard from him. I really think he's just a generally good guy, but he is savvy and smart. And he made $41 million for 4 books. Just super impressive, you know, just really impressive. But Mistborn was the first, second book I read by him. And I think it's still my favorite of all of them. And it's just fantastic. You'll read it quick. It's a short, simple read, but I give it an 11 out of 10. It's super fun.
It's not possible.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yeah, give it a read. You won't regret it.
All right, fine. I'll
get it on Audible.
I'll find it. This is funny because when you talk about how this technology will widen the wealth gap, I agree, but it sounds like you're, and correct me, absolutely correct me if I'm wrong, you are saying that the wealth gap has kind of been widening for all of human history, and this will just continue to widen the gap, and the gap will essentially widen forever until there's some sort of unsustainable point, right?
It ebbs and flows. You see the biggest correlations with it when there are huge technological gains, like historically. And that's really what I'm talking about are those spikes. And well, I think this is going to be the biggest spike so far.
There are plenty of, I mean, BC timeframe empires where there were enormous gaps between the wealthy and the unwealthy. So why can't it just be cyclical, I guess? Why can't, I mean, I'm not saying we have to have, you know, apocalypse or end times or anything like that to get there. But why can't we have the crashes that kind of bring it back down? And for the record, I'm sort of arguing against myself here a little bit. I do think, as I said on one of our previous episodes, I think the internet is a different kind of animal. I do think, even though humans are still going to be humans and we're still going to try to use our technologies in the same petty, simple, quite frankly, unimaginative ways, I do think the internet is different because it really did connect the world in a different kind of way that where geography is no longer in the way. So it could be that the cyclical widening of various gaps is now no longer cyclical because things are sort of a world economy. And I just don't know what that means. I mean, maybe it does mean dystopia. Maybe it means, I mean, hell, we could all find a way to blow each other up before we even get to that point anyway. Or what I think is more likely, I think that we will end up colonizing Moon, Mars, places like that. It's going to happen soon, with air quotes. And by soon, I mean 500 years. And that'll be relatively quick by technology standards. And that will be not a reset, but you'll have smaller communities, local governments. It'll kind of be like a start over. It'll be like a minus 1,000 years from a socio-political influence in those spots. And so you'll kind of, that'll be your reset. The humanity will still kind of survive and still kind of be functional in a nice way, just not on Earth. And eventually people will end up leaving and moving there, and then the process will start building up again over there. Maybe you have the leftovers of us on Earth who actually are like, oh, hey, where is everybody? Cool. Now we can actually do what we want and have our own little local economy, and it'll all fix itself. Because
I like the optimism.
that's totally how that's going to happen.
Yeah, I like the optimism.
There will just be a bunch of robots standing around being like, what the fuck, guys? Why'd you leave us here?
Wonder how much of that we're gonna have to edit out because no one's gonna be interested in it except us. I wonder how much of that is
That is
actually
not
just
true.
only for us.
No, the Oprah
No.
Paradox episode has proven that people are into some of the nerdy shit.
Okay,
They
good.
do listen to it. If anyone's still out there right now, thank you for being nerdy with us.
I'm sure we've said something so offensive by now that, everyone's gone.
Hello, fellow robots. We are not humans. Welcome to Two Robot Dads Talking.
AI robots happened faster than we thought. Now that's all we're talking to. We're actually all gone. They're listening to these. They've been scheduled. They've auto-launched, but there are no humans left. We're just talking to a bunch of robots. AI is sitting there going, wow, there was really no intelligence before us. This is what the world had to offer before we came along.
Pretty much. This is no, what this really is, the real plot twist is that we're all robots already. And we don't even realize it. We're just organic. I mean, that's the Prometheus. Well, that's not really the actual plot line of Prometheus, but that's sort of the plot line of Prometheus, that we were dumped out of a bottle in a river, and then the world slowly formed up, and what humans, the 10-foot tall humans have just been evolving for an extra 1,000 years after us or something.
Okay, yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah. You want to get really nerdy? This is the Turing test, I think it is, in philosophy. Because we're so nerdy. I mean, sometimes we're like, oh yeah, that. And listening to some of these recordings, I'm like, we didn't actually explain this. And there are a lot of people out there who are normal and don't know what all these things are because they actually, are sociable and accept and leading acceptable lives.
They have better things to do with their lives than just read the random nonsense that we read. Yeah.
But the Turing test, you've run across it in some way or another, I guarantee, just as a thought project in your life. It was originally developed decades ago, and this philosopher Turing postulated that essentially computers, he was not thinking artificial intelligence, for the record. He was purely thinking programmable, coded, if you get this question, give this response kind of computers. He thought that they would get so complex that eventually, if you had someone sitting at a computer in a room by themselves, just typing to another person, they would not know that they're actually talking to a computer. They would be convinced that there's another human being on the other side typing back to them, but it actually would just be the computer talking back to them, and that the computer is just, learned enough or been coded enough that it just knows how to respond and sound like a human, via text at least. It's kind of like that. It's these robots, these AI things. I mean, we've had this discussion before via, so I should say socially, we've had this discussion before via all these movies about how are we any different from an AI robot that just learns certain things and teaches ourselves stuff, and why is being human any more special? It just turns out we're just a higher form of technology, effectively, as far as we're concerned. And while I think there's some merit to that, whole other discussion, but I think we're not robots because we're not that good. If a true AI robot was left to teach itself, it would teach itself correctly. I'll put it that way. We are very good at not correctly teaching ourselves things, hence the burger flipping and all that kind of analogy.
This is true. Scientists have predicted that artificial intelligence will have human-level intelligence by the year 2035, but they think it might be sooner if our bar keeps dropping.
Oh, yeah, well, obviously, duh. Is there any way to do this negatively? Is there any way that in 3 years they reached it 3 years ago? Like, as in right now?
Quite possible.
I don't know, man. I do like to be a little bit of a rabble rouser and just say, maybe it's good that we have AI robots eventually reaching the point where they're like, you know what? Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. You're cool. Fuck you. And that's just how things go. Maybe we at least hope they don't like off us if they think we're destructive to ourselves. But, you know, maybe it's a little bit better for us to be like, oh shit, I need to actually behave myself. Otherwise, the robot marshal will throw me in the human loony bin.
And a society that's losing its fear of consequences. Maybe this is kind of what we need hanging over our head.
I mean, what's the problem, though? Everyone likes to be, all, oh, no, you know, the end of the human race. Like, so what? Who cares? Everything will be a lot, like, more chill afterwards.
I think you and I have very different interpretations of the end of the human race.
The darkness closing in on all of us at some point. So what if there's no more humans left? It just means we all have achieved the final human condition.
I don't think that's what that means. No, I don't think so.
For the record, if like a bus runs me over tomorrow, I was not thinking about doing it. This is the kind of like dark poetry stuff that people write right before you find them.
Yeah, it kind of is.
This is not me right now. This is just me being a weirdo. It's okay.
Well, Doug and I have managed to reach the complete antithesis of artificial intelligence. We have just embraced natural stupidity.
You're welcome.
That's where we are. You're welcome.
You know why this is a great segue to your next topic?
I have no idea, but I'm fascinated that you made this connection.
It's actually, you know why? If we just started talking about your next topic, I believe the movie is called Blippi. I have to look it up. And it is a robot that becomes self-aware and looks a lot like these guys. I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, look that one up. I did look up Surrogate. You're right. 2009, Bruce Willis. It had like a 6.3 IMDb rating.
I was on point this time. I said 10 to 15 years. I don't think it was called Blippi. It was called like Chappie. It's called Chappie. Sorry. That's why Chappie. I was thinking, because two syllables, the same ending. So never mind.
Yeah, it's not quite the same segue it could have been.
Yeah. This is going to be a bitch to edit later, so I'm just going to start talking. So I just looked it up, and turns out it's not a good segue at all.
But it's still a segue.
It's still a segue. Yeah. It's a segue in my own stupid head. Tom wanted to talk about Blippi tonight, the child entertainer, which I'm going to leave it at that because that just sounds weirder when I say it that way.
Yeah, you're definitely making it weird, I gotta say.
But there is a movie about a self-learning AI robot called Chappie, and somehow in my head I was like, maybe that's Blippi too. So here we are. But let's talk about Blippi. I did, when you brought up the topic, I did do a little bit more just cursory research, because to be perfectly honest, my exposure to Blippi was just dad knowing that his kid was watching the videos once upon a time. But it's your topic, you start.
Well, let's make this a little bit more dadding. We seem to have gotten some feedback, people like the dad thing, so let's make this a little more parenting and a little dadding, and let's just ask the question, how much do you know about the shows that your kids are watching? Do you do research on them? Do you just like watch an episode or two with them and say, yes, this passes my bar, or no, I don't want you watching this anymore? What is your level of, let's say, parental auditing for the things your kids watch?
This much.
Talking about it with me after the fact. All right. Well, that answers that question.
Are you asking me, or are
I'm asking you?
Are
yeah,
you
I'm curious.
Rhetoricalizing everything?
No,
else?
No. This is serious. What's your level of parental auditing for the things that your kids watch? And I know your kids are slightly younger than mine, so it might be a little different. But I'm curious.
If we're being honest, not as much as I should. You always have, before kids or before everything else, these grandiose ideas of, oh, I'll do this, or oh, I'll do that. I mean, it's right along the lines of when I said, I'll never tell my kids because I said so. And I lasted all of 2 weeks of dialogue before I used that one. I thought I would be the type to be, oh, there's this new show that I see you watching. I'm going to run to the computer and Google for 20 minutes and find a news article and ratings and other comments from other parents. And I just haven't done that for the life of me. It's pretty much getting a sense for what visually is happening on the screen. We went through a My Little Pony phase, which already that being around for a while, that I had some idea of it. But I mean, you watch 15 seconds of My Little Pony, you're like, oh, it's this all the time. And then I just would kind of half listen every so often with the sound being up, because kids like to have their shows on at as loud as that burping lady. So you kind of get to hear most of it anyway. So if I hear anything that sounds kind of weird, then maybe I'll come over and look. But that's pretty much it. And that is not really the amount I thought I would do. And I do, I guess, sort of wish I did a little bit more, which sounds weird to say, because I totally have my power to do that. I'm a man. I'm a grown adult, but with everything else, I usually don't. Ideally, I'd watch every episode, but I don't want to. It's not entertaining for me. So that's how much I do. How about you?
Okay. Yeah, my wife and I like to, before we let the kids just kind of watch something on their own, we like to watch an episode or two, kind of make sure it passes the sniff test. And then we're kind of hands off a little bit, frankly, just because who has time? Unfortunately, in today's world, there's a lot of work from home time, and there's a lot of being home when kids are sick and can't be in school and trying to work while they're doing that. And while I wish that I could say my kids are not watching things without me sitting there with them, that's just not the case. There are times they have a tablet or they're watching something on TV, and I'm simply not in the room. I'm being sort of an absent parent and saying, hey, I have to conference call. Go watch your tablet. Go do this, So we like to watch at least a couple of episodes of things with them, make sure it passes the sniff test. And then a lot of times, as long as it's benign, we'll let it slide. If it's not, then we tell them, no, you can't watch that yet. But an example of that is the one with Huggy Wuggy and all the big brightly colored monsters. I can't think of the name. Some dad somewhere knows this one. Rainbow Friends or Rain, something like that. Where essentially they're these people that were turned into monsters. Five Nights at Freddy's is an example of this, where my kids really wanted to watch Five Nights at Freddy's because there have been so many spoofs on kids' channels that they like, that they want to see this. And I was like, yeah, let me watch that movie a little bit. Watch the first half hour and see what I think. And I watched, like, oh no, this is a real horror movie. You guys aren't watching this. There's no way.
No, thank
But
you.
Shiloh and Bros, which is like a fantastic YouTube channel for kids. I actually love that channel. I think those kids who made that are extremely talented and very smart about where media is going. You want to talk about someone who's a bellwether for where media is headed? Whoever runs the Shiloh and Bros channel has got their thumb on the pulse of culture and of media and of kids. And they've done some like Five Nights at Freddy's spoofs that are totally kid appropriate, and they do some fun stuff. But for the most part, when we find something that we think is safe and ambiguous, we let them watch it. Shows that have passed our sniff test are Bluey, which is my all-time favorite kid show, as I think we've covered before. My Little Ponies, totally fine. Been a couple of cartoons that we liked. Blippi is the newest one that my youngest is into. She really is enjoying Blippi. And my wife is sitting down and watching a couple episodes, and I've only caught, I think, two so far. But Blippi is fascinating. It is a grown man in his 30s talking like in this weird, over enunciated, stresses his inflection, childlike voice. He really tries to be a child in an adult's body. And in some ways, it's kind of creepy. Like you watch it and you go, this guy, there's no way this guy is up and up and is a savory character.
Kind of is an understatement for me.
Well, in a lot of ways, especially once you really dig into him a little bit. And Curtis, the credit for this goes to my wife. She was the one who was like, I need to Google this guy and kind of, started this whole rabbit hole for me. But my wife gets all credit for this one. He is brilliant. And he is kind of like Jake Paul. He just knows how to go viral. He gets it. He knows what people want and he gives it to them. He was an SEO guy for LinkedIn before he started doing this. And when I learned that, it made so much sense to me. He hits on all of the key point indicators for selling children's material. He hits on everything. He goes over the top with it. He's got the color scheme. He's got the voice down. He's got the childish actions. He's got just enough learning. He goes to empty child play areas. And like that's where most of his episodes are actually focused. So to an adult, he is slightly more than mildly annoying. And kind of on the radar for this guy might be a creep. But to a kid, he's kind of what they want to grow up and be. Like, he's playing all the time. He's got all these play spaces to himself. He's learning. He's teaching. He's happy. He hits all the buttons the right way. It's brilliant. This guy is super smart. And it turns out that he was even better at this before Blippi. He's now worth somewhere around $140 million, by the way. That's what Blippi is worth. The net worth as of 2 years ago is ballpark $140 million. $140 million. Before he was Blippi, his real name is Stephen John. So never trust a guy who's got two first names. This guy is
Never.
Stephen John. Yeah. His start with videos was under the name Steezy Grossman. That was his actual name. I believe Grossman, Stephen Grossman was his original birth name, and he changed it to Stephen John because of what he did under the Steezy Grossman moniker. He started off by making
Don't watch
really
it.
low
Do
budget.
not watch it.
Oh, we're not even there yet. He started off making these really like low budget videos and trailers for full movies that he would bring to festivals and things, like Turd Boy and Underwear Man. And Turd Boy is literally a boy who's like made of poop. And there's a scene of him like making out with this actress. And if you look at the makeup, like they literally smeared this guy with what looks like feces all over his face. And he's making out with this woman and it's repulsive. And he had fun with it. But the one that really got me, the one that really cracked me up, is when everyone was doing the Harlem Shake. Do you remember that? Like 2013? Do you remember when that was a thing?
Oh, I do. And there were some insanely funny videos that came from that. But I now have an association with Harlem Shake that will
Forever haunt you.
forever be negative.
It's more than a blippy on the radar. Is that what you're telling me?
It's
So what he
just
did.
kind of shit all over everything for me.
Yeah, it's hard to wipe this one off. He did his version of the Harlem Shake video. He wanted to be different. He wanted to be original. He wanted to go viral. And so it's the music, and he's sitting on a toilet stall. He's sitting on a toilet in a bathroom stall. And
With a helmet.
he's with a bicycle helmet and I think goggles. And he's just kind of shaking his shoulders and bopping and doing his thing. And the camera pans down, and there's a guy on the floor of this bathroom, like feet up in the air, kind of almost like in a headstand, but not quite. Buck naked. They blur out his genitals and his lower region. He's also got a bicycle helmet on, and he's got like lab goggles. And then it goes back to Steve, Steezy. And he's literally squatting over him. And during the Harlem Shake, choreographs it nicely and just lets loose this diarrhea flow of excrement all over his friend. Just literally shits all over him. And this is the
How
video
do
that
we know that they were friends? We don't actually know this.
is anyone who's not your friend ever going to let you do something like that?
There are
We don't
people
know if
who
they
will
were
do
friends
lots.
afterward.
There are lots of people who will do lots of things for $20, Tom.
Well, I guess Doug would know. All
No,
right.
you would know,
I'm going to yield to your expertise on
Mr.
that
Ossifer. You know exactly what people will do for a couple of dollars.
I don't think I ever arrested someone for paying someone to defecate on them. I don't think that's
Oh,
what I
yeah,
ever
because it
made.
totally has to be the exact specific situation for you to accept it.
Yeah.
We should have put like some sort of warning before you started talking. Okay, so there are going to be show notes in this episode. You are not getting the link for that. I'm sorry. I am just gonna, if you are really, if you, excuse me, let me rephrase. If you are a highly esteemed, highly cultured, with a refined sense of taste individual, like me and Tom, go find the damn video yourself. I am not going to link it for you. It is, I will tell you, it is probably, you will not add any value to your life by watching this video.
No, we can put this up there with like two girls, one cup. You do not need to hear or watch these videos in order to really grasp what's happening here. But I will say also that our listeners would probably have a hard time finding this video. You might actually need a Tor browser and go searching on the deep net
Nope,
for
I
it.
found it
No, you
very.
found it?
Oh, come on.
Oh, okay. I stand corrected then.
I mean, in the interest of underlying themes, just go to Twitter. People have been posting that crap all the time under Blippi threads because they love just
Okay.
shitting on the guy.
Well, I know his lawyers managed to get most of it ripped off with a cease and desist through a copyright law, and that was they actually got a lot of kudos. He needed a way to get this removed when he was doing his blippy thing. He didn't want this to be common knowledge.
I did
So
not
this
search for it. I literally was going through Blippi threads researching and saw a reference to it, and within about five replies, someone posted it. So
Wow.
it's not that. I mean, maybe they'll do better soon, but it's not that hard to really get
All
if you know
right.
where to
Well,
look.
you took the easier approach. I'm impressed.
I have other people do the
My
work for
search
me.
was a little trickier. I thought I was being smart, and I was apparently doing things the
No,
hard
just go
way.
to Twitter. People are petty. We've talked about this.
Yeah, I
People are
stay off of
petty.
Twitter.
People find ways to just. Someone else does the work. Someone is committed enough to get it, save it, download it, and post it whenever they feel like.
Yeah. But yeah, that's where Blippi got his start. He literally got his start by shitting on people, or just one person. But he's got some. If you go back and see some of the trailers for those low budget films, like you can see he's clearly having fun with it, and he's clearly like this jackass college frat guy kind of guy. But he managed to take that and turn it around into a multi-million dollar franchise that. I mean, it's mind-blowing how successful he's made this. And if you look at Blippi and you break it down almost scientifically, you break it down by the elements, he nails everything. He doesn't miss a beat. It's like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Jake Paul had a baby, and it's this.
Well, I just found the title for this episode.
Mr. Rogers and
Mr.
Jake Paul
Rogers
had a
and Jake Paul
baby.
had a baby. And I'm just going to leave it at that.
All right.
Yeah, excuse me. Are you finished? Good and
Yeah,
kind
go ahead.
gentleman.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I do remember the exact first time when I saw Blippi. And I do remember being like, nope. Automatic distrust, do not like this. The reason I do not like it is just in general, any male, well, excuse me, any legal adult male, 18 and up, who is doing anything catering towards kids, to me, it's automatically a red flag. And it's not that every single person who does stuff like that is bad, it's just that there's when it, in the case of men, there's almost always an ulterior motive. There is a reason every single daycare, if you look at their staff, it's all women and a lot of even younger women too, potentially, but it's all women. If you walk into a daycare, just, you're thinking about sending your, having your kid go to the daycare or even you're just there for some other reason. If you see a man, like an adult man with the children, you're sitting there thinking, that must be the landlord. That must be the boss. That must be maybe is that that kid's dad? No one ever says, oh, look, that must be one of the people who works here. You never think that. And if you do, then I don't believe you. You're just saying that for show. I think everyone, even though they don't want to outright say it, most men who want to put themselves around children have some sort of shady ulterior motive. There are things like teaching where you like the teaching possibility. And actually, I was talking about this with my wife earlier. She talked about it as it's really when you're putting yourselves around children who are helpless in some way. So even a grade school teacher, the kids can wipe their own ass. There's a certain level of self-care the kids do. They don't have a helplessness to them. And men are okay around that, especially when there's some other sort of primary function, like as a teacher or as security or as something like that. But when you have a male around your under 5-year-olds, it's just a higher rate of, I mean, that's what your predators do. They go after their prey. That's a really long-winded way of saying, oh, look, adult male, dresses funny, high-pitched voice, obviously trying to ingratiate himself to children. I was not automatically labeling him as some sort of predator, but I was automatically on the watch of like, I already don't really like this guy. And I thought, I hope it's purely a money grab. No one, again, this is something that people don't like to think about other people because it's sort of insulting. Like, oh, he's just in it for the money. I was hoping for this, and it looks like that's what he was doing here. There's nothing like that about him. He just saw a niche market and ran with it and turned it into something big. So I hope there's nothing that comes out later from anything else with him. And so far there hasn't been. He's had a level of exposure that it feels like if there was a thread to pull, it probably would have been pulled by now. But that was my reaction, was I hope this guy is just in it for the money and willing to do this shtick for the money. Because otherwise it's a whole lot worse.
It's interesting you say that. As you say it, I find myself largely agreeing. However, I think of a teacher at my son's pre-K, Mr. Sean, and he was incredible for my son in helping him kind of overcome his emotional struggles. Way more patient, just an amazing teacher with him. He's by far my son's favorite teacher so far, I think, ever. And he was very impactful and he was very wholesome. And I never had those thoughts about him. And I think he was a generally amazing person for the patience and the efforts he put into helping my son kind of overcome some stuff. Other than Mr. Sean, I can't really think of any adult males that I can think of that I was not kind of wary of around my kids. So I guess maybe that's interesting. Maybe I'm sexist in that regard and never even knew it. But yeah, I feel as you say that, I was agreeing with you. And then loudly in my head was like, well, except Mr. Sean. Like I kept, oh, except Mr. Sean over and over and over again, who was just amazing and is still an amazing person as far as I can tell. But other than that, I think you're right. I don't have any other examples popping into my head. And when a male takes interest in my kids, I am way more on guard than I am if a woman does. So maybe I'm a little more sexist than I thought.
I'm really good at this. I'm really good at saying something really broad brush, and people would be like, "Well, you're an asshole." And like, yes, I am
That's
sometimes,
not where I went at
but
all,
no,
though.
I know.
You're being protective. I think Father Christopher might have scarred me and left a bad impression, and I'm still trying to recover from that.
Oh,
That
he
might
did
be
more
where
than
I'm at.
scar you. The well, that's why I say it. There are exceptions to every rule. I can tell you that I have absolutely no interest in abusing or taking advantage of any children, because there's lots of reasons. I mean, and we're not even talking about like legal reasons. There's, self-respect, there's pride, there's the fact that I'm a semi well-adjusted human being on most days, and that's just not my cup of tea. But if I somehow found myself in a situation, our AI robot overlords are like, okay, Doug, we can throw you into the fire pit or you can run our daycare. Yeah, I'll take care of the kids. I'll try to be a good, helper for them for that. I'll try to be right by them, but I don't want to do that. I don't wake up and think, I want to spend all my time with a bunch of small children that are not mine. That's just not the typical male motivation. Normal, non-predatory men love their own children. It is possible to love and care for and have a calling to care for children in general. And that also manifests in most men in different ways, just as general societal protectors. I mean, it's a similar vein to the police officer, the guy that will save a random kid from an attacker. I mean, it's the same protective instinct, but we're not the ones going to feed the kid, change the kid's diapers, and all that stuff. We need a personal commitment, connection to them, and that usually comes in the form of our own children. The maternal instinct comes from women. So when you see a guy that's doing this, it's perfectly natural for us to think, I need to at least pay more attention to this person, or at least I need to get a lot more feedback from my kid for what happened that day, if this is even going to happen. And I accepted a long time ago that this is again another broad brush, but stereotypes usually exist for a reason. They're not always right, but I am a walking stereotype. I can't jump. I can't dance. I played tennis. Like you all know what I am already. You can call it sexist if you want. It doesn't mean it's wrong.
Now, I would actually disagree with that because I was a teacher for two
Good.
years and yeah, good, I guess. But I was a teacher for 2 years and they were older kids. They were middle school and then later it was high school kids.
Yeah,
But
but that's
I will
not the
say that
same thing, though.
I agree, but I will say when I had that role, just like when I was coaching, you do adopt almost a fatherly like mindset with these kids that aren't yours. Like there is a call to mentoring, and there is a call to take care of them and to give them their best shot. And to it, there really is more there than just being a teacher. There's a bond that happens, and it is in a lot of ways almost a paternal bond. I mean, I've had a couple of them call me, and their parents call me years after.
You didn't want to get their goldfish for them, though. That
Well,
you
that was never really relevant to what I was doing, though.
correct. That's the men want to be protectors. They want to be father figures. There's real, actual fulfillment in being father figures, even for not your own children. But men do not want to change diapers all day, unless it's their child. It is a very specific kind of man that wants to change diapers for children all day who are not his children and have him not have some sort of ulterior motive. Find me someone like that. Send me his name. I'll go talk to him. I don't know. Like I will want to see, I want to see this unicorn. I just don't believe that person exists, at least in modern society. I mean, you just don't see that very often. And again, I'm not saying that automatically makes you a bad person if you're doing that. It's just so rare that you automatically question it naturally. And in my mind, I'm saying that is a proper response. You can't toss him in jail right away, but it is perfectly logical for you to question that. And a man in that position should not mind being questioned because he has to realize that that's not the expectation. Perfect example. There have been a couple of times when, and this was when I was in my mid-20s, so like I'm not married, I'm not like dating or anything, I don't have my own kids or anything like that. I saw a kid who was obviously lost looking for their mom in the store. And the kid looks at me and they're crying. This was two separate times that this more or less exact situation happened. And you can see the look in their eyes, and it's kind of like, help me. Like they look right at me and they're like, I need help. I'm lost. And there was this thing inside of me that was like, run. Like, I just need to run away from this kid. Like, I need to run away from this kid because if I look like I'm walking towards this kid, someone's gonna be like, oh, he's gonna snatch this lost kid. So I stopped where I was and I literally sat all the way down on the ground, like ass on the floor, legs outstretched. Like, I am not going anywhere quickly from this position. And I let the kid come up to me. Okay, you can wait here with me. And sure enough, within like 60 seconds, frantic mom comes, looks down the aisle, sees the kid, runs up, and and everything's all good. And one of the moms looked at me and was like, thank you. She was really genuinely happy that someone found her kid and was watching her kid. The other mom, if she could like destroy my soul with her eyes, she would. And I didn't mind though. Normally, if someone gives me a look like that when I'm trying to do something nice, I'm like, well, fuck you too. But this was one of those situations where I was very well aware of the fact that I am not a trustworthy person with a lost child who's not mine. Like, that's what society expects. They expect me to not be trustworthy with it. So I just think it's okay to think that. And that was my same feelings with Blippi was, I hope the guy's only in it for the money and that he's willing to do this for the money, because if it's anything else, it's not good. And for the record, my kids did love Blippi for a hot second. It was the exact age range he's marketing to, 2 to 4 years old. I still occasionally hear an excavator song reference, and it makes my blood boil constantly because I've fucking heard that fucking song
I don't know
so
the
many
excavator
times.
song yet. Nope, I don't know that one yet.
Well, I'll link that in the show notes. That was my kid's absolute favorite one. Must have been particularly good too, because I see a reference on other Blippi references. So,
Right. That gives me some things to think about. I'm not sure how I feel about all that, because in a lot of ways, I think you're right, but in a lot of ways I disagree with it, and cognitive dissonance and I are not friends right now. There's not enough energy to hold two different positions in my head simultaneously, so I gotta make sure I digest this.
this is one of those cases where, while I'm kind of standing on my soapbox and waving my arms around frantically and saying all these broad brush grandiose, I've got it all figured out for my own little portal of the world viewpoint, Blippi is one of those things that we all encounter where you just have to trust your gut, I think. When I saw it, like I said, I was kind of a little bit on edge. It wasn't like I expected Blippi to come crashing through the wall like the Kool-Aid man and be like, "Hi, Doug's kids." I wasn't expecting.
I haven't told that story, have I? I don't think I've told that story.
Well,
All right, we're not going to go there.
sounds like
Okay.
you're about to.
No, we're
No,
not.
we're not. Okay,
We're
good.
not going there.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, no, we're not going there
Yeah,
right now. Okay.
we're not going there.
Yeah. So he wasn't an immediate threat, but if I found out later that he was some sort of predator, of course I don't want my kids watching his videos. Even if there's nothing wrong with the videos, it's sort of the principle of the thing.
Yeah.
And while I was on guard for that stuff, there was nothing that was immediately. I didn't think that about him right away. I wasn't convinced that that was him. It was just, I was just always going to be sort of open to the possibility that he could be that. Because, okay, let's do some bad analogies again. No one knew the BTK killer was who he was for forever. And he was a loved local family man. His own freaking daughters and family didn't know anything about it until later. So some of these guys.
Bind, torture, kill, right? That's what BTK stood for,
Yeah,
yeah.
some people just don't register that, even for the rest of us, even for their own family who should be close to it or stumble across something weird. And I mean, his family even was like, "Yeah, we never even saw anything weird. We didn't even rationalize anything away. He was just really good at hiding it and controlling himself." So I got long-winded again somehow, magically, but trust your gut. Your gut is most of the time. If you just actually care about your family and care about protecting your family as a dad, your gut will tell you what to do. And just leave it at that.
Yeah, I feel in this particular case, cognitive dissonance aside, I will always, as a dad, err on the side of caution. Whether it's a male or a female or an AI walking robot, and I'm never going to feel guilty about being suspicious of people trying to insert themselves into my kids' lives. I will always try to vet them, and I will always be protective of my kids in that way. I think Blippi is just. I think the Steve John is just very savvy and very smart and knew how to make money. And in 5 years, built a $140 million empire in a very effective way, where he's making money off of kids and their parents. I think it was just a money grab for him. Like I say with Mr. Sean, I never had those worries about him, but he's pre-vetted by people that I trust, and that might have been a part of it. And he just struck me as a really great guy, and I will probably be forever grateful for the impact he had on my son. But yeah, I think largely I'm leery of lots of people that try to get too close to my kids. I don't know that I ever stopped and broke it down as, men and women before, but maybe I am automatically more trusting of women because it's sort of the culturally accepted role that's been put there, and because I fall very much into the category you broke down, whereas I've always wanted to be a protector, I've always wanted to be the white knight, I've always wanted to go out and be the sheepdog, That makes a lot of sense. I think I need to think about that, but I think in hindsight, I probably largely agree with what you said. Good job. You win. You officially get to be the brains of the podcast. It's official.
It's not good. I much prefer to be the looks. It's so much easier. This is just a completely random aside from the brains versus looks thing, but at the poker table way back when I was going constantly from whatever episode that was during my legal no man's land, I used to tell people when they'd find out that, oh, that's your dad, at that table or at the table with us, and I'd just say, yeah. I got my looks from one parent and my brains from the other. And it's up to you to decide which.
Nice.
It was always my favorite thing because I think most people thought it was because they knew one would be insulting to me, but really I was trying to find out which one was insulting for my dad. And once or twice someone said something like, "Oh yeah, you definitely got your looks from your dad." They understood the assignment.
Yep, they knew the homework. All right. Well, on that note, I think I haven't said that yet this episode. So
No,
on
you
that happy
haven't.
note.
You always say that. Well, I was gonna say one of the most comforting things for me with Blippi was when a different guy started showing up in the videos, that next dude after the
Yes.
purchase. because I didn't see any news articles about old Blippi getting arrested or anything that told me that the guy probably was in it for a money grab and sold it or expanded so much to where he was starting to delegate, and that meant it was more about the money for me. So it did semi-irrationally make me feel a little bit better about my kids
Yeah.
watching the videos.
And my 2-year-old was all over that, by the way. When the imitation Bluey comes on screen, my 2-year-old's like, no, that's not the right Bluey. Something's wrong with Bluey, mommy. Mommy, change it. And she skips it. She doesn't want to watch it. Should we do dad jokes?
I think we should do dad jokes. Yes.
Did you go with themed dad jokes this evening? Have I rubbed off on you enough? Do I need to defecate on you in a bathroom stall to really rub off on you?
We're not quite there yet in my
All
desperation
right.
to increase my brains.
This episode is certainly going to be marked explicit.
They all are. And it's usually.
Yeah, this one's a little extra explicit, I think.
Yeah, it's usually because I say something, but this one was definitely your fault.
Yeah, 100%.
No, I didn't originally go themed, but then I was trying to think about a way to go themed.
Have you started breaking down jokes like off the cup yet and started presenting those as dad jokes?
No, that's much more organic for me. It's usually mid-conversation, I'm like, oh, hey, this is stupid to say. I'm gonna say it.
Nice.
Now I'll just go with my pre-planned one.
I went with the, I started going down the artificial intelligence rabbit hole for my jokes because I wanted to be tied to the topic. And as should happen with anyone my age who grew up with my interests, I wound up going down a Transformers rabbit hole. What did Optimus Prime do when his dishwasher blew a transformer?
He told the Transformer to stay away from his mom.
No, he filed for divorce.
Oh.
It dovetails nicely into our borderline sexist conversation, doesn't it?
So good.
That's what the Transformer said.
Yes. So, what are you watching tonight?
I was hoping to watch a basketball game, but I think instead I'm going to
I
bed.
said washing, not
Oh,
watching,
washing.
washing. Yeah, mine is as usual, completely unrelated. I was just trying to pull a good joke out of my ass.
It sounds related then.
It sounds really, yeah. Why did the janitor take an early retirement?
The janitor?
The janitor. Yes. He can be for a daycare if you really want me to tie it in, but he's just a janitor.
Why did he take an early retirement?
For the record, I've also started selecting jokes that I feel like you won't get because it's much more fun.
Success. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to get this one. I don't know.
Because he realized that grime doesn't pay.
All right. Not your best stuff.
All right, fine. Let me do another one.
Yeah, I was definitely not getting there, and that one I
Yeah.
was not going to get to.
I should try to not just stump you. I should just try to have general fun.
Did you want to do another one for real?
I mean, I'm kind of wanting to, yeah.
All right. I will do the outro then. You can look one up and I'll do the outro and you can do your editing magic and put it in order
Oh
if you
God,
want.
don't make me copy and move it. I hate fucking doing that. Okay, here you go. Here's one. You ready?
Ready.
What's the longest piece of furniture in a school?
What's the longest piece of furniture in a school? What's the longest piece of furniture in a school? Oh, it's a math table. It's a multiplication table.
Man, you are good. This is why.
Yeah, we
Yeah,
got there.
that's it. This is why I pick jokes that you can't get.
I was way overthinking it there
Yes,
for a
you
minute.
were.
Like,
Yes, you
okay.
were.
All right, multiplication table. I'm good, solid.
Good.
Feeling good
Do
about
our outro. I'm gonna be really annoyed when I'm editing this.
it. Oh, good. Thank you, everyone, for listening. This has been episode something or other of Two Dads Talking. By now, we've got our official logo in place. By now, we've got our merchandise line in place. You can get your Reach the 11th Week t-shirts and hats and mugs. I'm sure we've got all that in the store by now. More importantly, make sure you follow, like, subscribe, give us comments, give us feedback. Hopefully by now we've got a Facebook group up and running where we've got some good dad input going and some good conversations. And hopefully we've got a Patreon up and running by now so that we can offer you guys some neat stuff for a cup of coffee a month or so and really kind of give you back a little bit of value while we try to fund the podcast. Because it turns out these things are a little more expensive than you might think. But yeah, we're recording this the end of January, the last day of January. You're probably listening to it sometime in March, I would guess. Thanks
Probably,
for tuning
because we're not going to drop an episode a day on you to catch up.
in. No, we're not. We might try and speed it up a little bit, but we're not going to do that.
Two or three a week at a time or something to catch it up there. But yeah, probably March.
Probably March. But in the meantime, we do appreciate you. While we don't know how many of you are listening, or if you're just AI-powered robots by this point in time, we do appreciate you. We hope that by now we've gotten better at this and we're providing you something of value and that you guys are reaching out and letting us know how we can do it better and hopefully sharing some good stories with us that we can relate to the podcast. So thank you for listening to Two Dads Talking. We appreciate you. Keep dadding. Go dad go. And we'll talk to you later.
Go dad go.